Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
I do believe that it is possible to grow a lot of your food without spending a lot of money. It's just about being connected to the resources in your community.
Mother Hubbard's Cupboard is a go-to community resource for all things food. Stephanie Solomon shows us around the Hub's Garden Tool Lending Library. Our ingredient of choice with Chef Daniel Orr today is lentils. Adjusting to the sounds of rural life, we hear stories from farmers Jack and Diane Aaron. Evaluating the U.S. meat inspection system, Harvest Public Media reports that watchdog groups are concerned, and making sure foods that contain marijuana are safe to eat and labeled correctly. That's a story coming up from Colorado during today's show. Luann Johnson is here with some news stories from the world of food.
We have three stories today, Annie. Purdue Farms is the first major chicken producer to go antibiotic-free at the hatching stage. The third largest chicken producer announced that now 95% of the chickens it sells are antibiotic-free. Chicken embryos are commonly injected with vaccines before hatching, causing a hole in the egg. To avoid bacteria getting into the hole and infecting the embryo, an antibiotic called gentamicin is also injected into the egg. Over the past 12 years, Purdue has been phasing out the use of gentamicin in hatching chicks, including increasing cleanliness in hatcheries. Purdue will continue to use a class of antibiotics called ionophores only by veterinarian prescription. Purdue says ionophores will only be given to sick chickens and never to those in the no antibiotics ever line. A recent study looked at the effects of reducing carbohydrates in one's diet versus reducing dietary fat intake. The study has stoked the fires of what is being called the diet wars. In a randomized trial of 148 racially diverse participants, researchers found that after a year, those who had completed a low-carb regimen lost more weight than those completing a low-fat regimen. Both groups did not change their physical activity. Food experts and bloggers jumped at the study, stating that the definition of low-fat, 30% of one's calories, wasn't really low-fat at all. Marion Nussel of Food Politics argued that those eating a low-carb diet were likely eating less food, thus resulting in fewer calories. She argued that cutting out entire groups of food was sometimes an easy way for dieters to lose weight in the short term, but it's not sustainable for the long run. Andy Bilotti of Civil Eats points out the study didn't differentiate between types of food. Were the participants eating whole, unprocessed foods? Was the low-fat group consuming more sugar? The focus was too broad, he argues, and didn't allow for a better understanding of overall health, not just weight loss. If there's anything both sides can agree on, it's that more research should be done. And one way to teach good food virtues to kids is to get their hands dirty. In Boston, a restaurant owner and a chef have joined forces with an urban youth program to show kids how good fresh local food can be. The project, called Farm to Change, shows 8 to 12-year-olds how to grow food from seed and make recipes from their harvests. At the Blue Hill Boys and Girls Club in the Dorchester neighborhood of Boston, kids plan a menu in early spring and then plant and grow the vegetables they need to serve it. We've posted a couple recipes from Farm to Change organizer, Chef Chris Himmel, on our website. Check out the margarita pizza with garlic and kale and Himmel's sweet and sour ratatouille. They're at eartheats.org.
We post lots of news stories and recipes on our Twitter feed, which is at eartheats. Thanks for the updates, Luann Johnson.
Anytime.
Meat inspectors all over the country are supposed to ensure that the meat we eat is safe. But according to a growing chorus of current and former inspectors and a number of watchdog groups, the U.S. meat inspection system isn't doing its job. In an investigation by the Hale Center for Journalism and Harvest Public Media, Mike McGraw has the story.
You use the knife to open up organs, heads.
While other girls dreamed of being teachers or doctors, Jennifer Bedar wanted nothing more than to be a federal meat inspector.
The only place I do not use my knife is in the carcass rail, because that is more where I'm touching into things, where I'm palpating into the pelvic cavity to check for abscesses.
She wanted to be part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service.
This is everything I ever hoped for. All my life, I wanted to be on that floor.
She loved the idea of watching out for consumers, as inspectors have done for more than a century. Bedar was hired in March on a short-term contract to work at a large beef plant just up the road from her home in Hooker, Oklahoma. But she lasted barely a month.
I don't feel comfortable with the food that we're shipping.
She was trained to spot problems like abscesses and fecal contamination in the carcasses coming down the line, problems that can harbor bacteria that can lead to illnesses. But she said supervisors often told her to ignore issues in the high-speed beef plant and keep production moving.
I didn't want to be part of a process where I felt that a kid could die, or anybody could die. I cannot live with that.
In the end, Bedar walked away from her dream job, frustrated and dispirited. Federal meat inspectors have always worked in a tense environment, but Bedar's experience points to what many critics call a breakdown of the system.
Well, I've been working on meat and poultry issues for 15 years, and I think this is the worst I have seen it.
Tony Corbo is a longtime lobbyist with a consumer watchdog group, Food and Water Watch. The group was contacted by many current and former meat inspectors who say the system is in disarray. The Hale Center for Journalism spoke with a number of inspectors who say that many of the issues stem from recently announced changes for poultry plants. The Agriculture Department wants to do fewer physical inspections and more lab testing of meat. Critics say the new rule, under which poultry plant workers will replace some USDA inspectors, amounts to a deregulation of the poultry industry. They fear it could spread to beef and other meat. Here's Corbo with Food and Water Watch again.
The remaining inspectors that who will be working in these poultry plants will be refocused to do more microbiological sampling.
The new rule is voluntary, and it's unclear how many plants will opt in. If all plants participate, more than 600 inspection positions will be phased out. In preparation, the USDA has been replacing retiring inspectors all over the system with temporary workers like Bedar. They've also instituted hiring freezes.
We turned up internal documents that showed that over the past month, there's been a rash of plants that have not been covered and have not received the proper inspection.
Several inspectors say they were discouraged from performing thorough inspections of meat, and thanks to staffing problems, some inspectors are driving from plant to plant, working 80 hours a week just to keep up with heavy workloads. Federal auditors say fatigued inspectors could lead to food safety problems, and food safety advocates say it has all resulted in some meat being packaged without inspection at all.
So when you see that inspection legend that says inspected and passed by USDA, it may not be true.
Alfred Almanza, administrator of the inspection agency, declined to respond to these concerns on tape, but his office did respond to some of the questions we posed and declined further comment. The agency insists that the meat inspection system is still effective and getting even more effective. Their spokesman said, quote, "The Food Safety and Inspection Service is modernizing all aspects of our operations to better prevent foodborne illness by focusing on preventing rather than reacting to contamination and other food safety hazards."
When I came to work for the agency actually wanted you to do your job.
Stan Painter was a meat inspector for 30 years and now helps run the union that represents those inspectors. He's had a front row seat to the recent turmoil inside the agency.
Today, I'm of the opinion the agency does not want inspectors to do their job.
Many harried inspectors don't have time to fully inspect meat, Painter says.
The agency has even used the phrase, come in the front door, wave at them as you go through the plant, and go out the back door. And that's what the agency has considered inspection.
And those inspections are what stand between you and a potentially fatal battle with foodborne pathogens. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Mike McGraw.
Stories from across the American food landscape from Harvest Public Media. Connect with them at harvestpublicmedia.org. Stephanie Solomon seems like one of those people who was just born with a green thumb.
Well, I mean, I like to tell people that I've been in some way overseeing the garden program at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard for many years now. I'm known as a person in the community that is good at gardening, yet I constantly kill houseplants.
Anybody out there relate to that? I know I sure can. In fact, that's one of Solomon's selling points when she teaches gardening classes at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. Anyone can learn to grow food, no matter your track record of killing houseplants. Their ToolShare program also aims to equip anyone who wants to grow food with the tools they need. You might remember a previous Earth Eats where we talked about their kitchen ToolShare. Well, they also lend out gardening tools. When I visited her at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, the place was a bit of a maze with lots and lots of boxes everywhere.
Okay, big step. Oh, my wires. Oh, canned goods, onions.
It's a good problem to have when we have so much food that it's hard to
In addition to the food pantry and the tool share, the hub, as it's nicknamed, has a garden out front where Solomon is able to demonstrate how all these tools work.
Shovels, all different sorts of shovels. Is that an axe and a pick?
Yes. So pickaxes were a big part of getting our garden started here at 1100 West Allen Street because there were a couple places where there was concrete and gravel. And so we realized, you know, this is a tool that people need and not many people have it sitting around.
The tool share program is free to customers of the pantry and certain organizations. Community members can pay a small annual fee to have access to the lending library. Solomon borrowed a bunch of shovels earlier this year, actually, when she had some friends over helping her build raised garden beds. She says that even though many of these tools are intended for use in early spring, there is one thing gardeners can do right now that doesn't require any tools.
The ideal garden situation is in the fall, sheet mulching. So laying down layers of organic matter, whatever you have, it can be compost, manure, straw, leaves. Everybody has leaves in the fall. And then let it sit. And then in the spring, go on in there and dig out pathways where you want your pathways to be. And then start preparing the soil in the beds. And the best tool for that really is the broadfork.
Show me the broadfork. I'm not sure I would know it if I saw it. Ooh, squeezing back here. Oh, my. Big step. Okay.
This is the broad fork right here. You're holding on the handles and then you kind of jump on the bar and then you pull backward and the soil comes up. It's just a fun tool to use. And whereas a tiller would really be breaking apart the life in the soil, killing the worms, a broad fork really leaves more of the soil structure intact at the same time as kind of loosening it to prepare it for growing vegetables.
A broad fork can cost you $150 easy. So the Hub's lending library is helping cut down on startup costs for beginning gardeners. Want to do some fall and late winter gardening? There are tools for that, too.
We're really excited about these low tunnel sets because you can borrow them for up to 3 months, which is, you know, a season. So if you want to do fall gardening and extend your season, these low tunnel sets are available to help with that process.
On a smaller level, they have trowels and pruners. Solomon says their container gardening classes are always well attended. Participants watch as the educators plant herbs in old wheelbarrows and other household items. Then they take home some cuttings to jumpstart their own gardens. The whole idea is to show that, okay, so you don't have a yard, no problem. You can still grow food in your house. Here's how, and here are the tools you'll need.
I do believe that it is possible to grow a lot of your food without spending a lot of money. It's just about being connected to the resources in your community.
And she adds that once you start growing your own food, you'll have something to share with others too. More about the Hub and the Tool Share program is at mhcfoodpantry.org.
Are you ready to make some soup?
Lentils on the menu today, to be specific. Chef Daniel Orr bellies up to the stove for us.
We're going to do a yellow lentil soup today. And in the recipe, it does call for some stock, but you could just as easily use water. So if you want to make it vegetarian, you can use water. If you want to make it vegan, you don't have to put the sour cream or yogurt in at the end if you don't want to. All right, so we're going to get started by adding the extra virgin olive oil to our pot and quickly following it with the chopped garlic. Okay, and you're looking for that kind of roasty, toasty aroma to come through. The garlic will just start to turn a little bit brown, and that's when you want to have your other vegetables ready because you don't want that garlic to burn or it will get bitter. All right, so we've got our onions. You know, I don't know if everyone can afford it in their household, but it's always great to have one piece of equipment, and that's called a sous chef. All right. So
you've got like six or seven of those around here.
We've got
here.
Quite a few around here. So it makes it a lot easier. You can just start, you know, you arrive and everything's ready for you.
You know, you've got a young niece or nephew wandering around. Put them to work, right?
Absolutely. All right. We're just going to stir those around, coat them with that oil and garlic mixture. Okay. We're going to toss in the carrots, tomatoes. Okay. And then we've got our red lentils. Lentil actually comes from the word lens, and these look like little eye lenses. Okay, I'm adding some water. You see all those nice veggies in there. We're going to bring that to a boil. The other things that you could add to this, if at this point, if you'd like, you could throw in a bay leaf, some rosemary. You know, there's lots of ways that you can dress this up. They could throw some crab meat in this, which would be great. Some shrimp. You could always put a little bowl of bacon out there. People could sprinkle some bacon. They could put some sour cream on top of it when it's done. You know, use the recipe as a guideline, but don't act like you're reading the Bible. All right, I'm going to finish by adding a little bit of the chili powder and then some salt. We're going to cover this, bring it to a boil, and let it simmer for 20 minutes. And you got soup.
Stick around for another recipe using lentils, coming up in a couple minutes. While you wait, check out our website, where you'll find lots of recipes for butternut squash and Roma tomatoes and beets. Oh, we love our beet recipes. We're at eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, now with 5 locations in Bloomington. Blooming Foods has supported locally produced food and artisanal goods since 1976. Bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX. And Charles Schwab and Company Incorporated, now with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington.
Back again. Earth Eats in the house.
That's Chef Daniel Orr, and I'm Annie Corrigan. Another recipe. Here we go.
Green lentils are a very economical dish, full of protein, but they get boring after a while. Everybody's had them kind of the same 5 ways. So today we're going to do them curried, kind of an Indian style.
That was the sound of onions going into a hot pot with oil?
Yes. We've got a flat-sided pan with a wider bottom than it is high. That's called a roust. And you use that pan when you want to reduce things down, cook them quickly. So we put the onions in there. We've got about 2 cups of onions. What goes better with onions than garlic? And the garlic, we're going to allow it, since it's going to be in a curry, we want it to be a little more pungent. So we're going to let that stay basically raw in there. Then I'm going to add some ginger. And ginger, when you cut ginger, you lay it down on its side and you cut through those fibers east to west instead of north to south, I guess. And then you're going to mince it. And that way you won't get big, long hairs in your ginger. I'm going to add that. We're going to add the juice of 1 orange, about 1 teaspoon of orange zest. Try to use organic. If you don't use organic, you need to make sure you wash your citrus really well before you zest it. Okay, and now we're going to just start building the flavors. I've got about 1 tablespoon of tomato paste. That's going to give us that nice acidic flavor. We're going to add our dried cherries. I think it adds a really nice dimension and get a little bit of sweet and a little bit of heat. And that, to me, is what a curry is all about. Now we're going to actually add the curry powder. About a cup of diced tomatoes. Add some nice local basil. So we've got some good things going on there. I'm going to add a little bit of thyme. I'm just going to pull it right off the stems, leave the leaves whole. Some chopped parsley, cilantro, whatever you like. So we've got this nice paste made up, and now we're going to add our lentils, which are already cooked. Mix the two together. Let me give this a taste. All right, let's plate this up. Great garnished with some cilantro and some fresh citrus, and I think you'll really enjoy this great vegetarian dish.
Gluten-free for this one as well. Visit eartheats.org before you plan your next dinner. When Colorado legalized recreational marijuana use, it opened up the sale of food products infused with the drug to everyone over the age of 21. That means a whole new set of bakers and food companies that have to ensure their products aren't contaminated with salmonella or norovirus, and that they're not falling in the hands of children or too potent to eat. Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon looks at how they do that.
Maureen McNamara takes her place at the front of a conference room in Denver. It's set up like a classroom, and today's students all have one thing in common. They're making, testing, and selling edible marijuana.
A few myths dispelled. Today is not a cannabis cooking class. It's about food safety.
For years, McNamara has taught kitchen staff how to wash their hands and keep food at the right temperature. But just recently, she started a side business to pass along the same information to people making food infused with THC, the psychoactive compound in marijuana. In many Colorado marijuana stores, you can find candies, chocolates, even granola bars that give you a high.
And I'm going to keep asking you to take it back to your specific operation. I do that in every class, but I think it's particularly unique for you because you're doing things differently here in the Wild West.
Not that wild, at least from a regulatory standpoint. Trainings like McNamara's are now mandatory for pot-infused food preparers. And this summer, Colorado's put in place a bevy of rules for marijuana entrepreneurs.
This is the direct result of taking a product that used to exist on the underground market and putting it into a legal regulated one.
Taylor West is deputy director of the National Cannabis Industry Association.
Now we have the impetus to do things like trainings to be sure that everything is being handled in a professional manner. You don't have that in an illegal market.
Creating that legal, regulated market, though, has presented some challenges, especially when it comes to edibles. Regulators worried pot candies would appeal to children, so they forced all foods to be sold in child-resistant packages. Washington State, also working to establish rules for recreational marijuana industry, has banned marijuana-infused candies, allowing baked goods and bottled drinks. But Louis Koski, director of Colorado's Marijuana Enforcement Division, says another problem has cropped up: potency.
Some of the new consumers in the legalized market just were not very well informed in terms of how to safely take that product.
Since January 1st, some eager, inexperienced consumers have overindulged on the pot-infused food and then showed up in emergency rooms sweating and paranoid, or worse. Koski says that's why new rules limit the serving size of foods infused with THC and ensure the package label warns people about what they're going to eat. Koski says state law already requires a paragraph of information be included on labels.
So if you continue to put other warnings on there, you have to really question whether or not that becomes effective as a means to be able to really educate a consumer and make the product safe for them.
How's it going, guys? What are we thinking today, gentlemen? Something to eat, something to smoke?
And so most of the education has fallen to the pot shops themselves. Brendan Grenny welcomes two shoppers to Organic Alternatives, a recreational and medical marijuana store in Fort Collins, Colorado. Grenny is a bud tender. Yes, a bud tender. And his job is much more than running a cash register. Even with labels packed full of information, Grenny says most people don't read them. That's where he comes in.
You know, I don't know what your tolerance is. It varies by the individual and metabolism, but 10 milligrams is what we recommend on those guys.
He's talking about orange-flavored THC-infused liquids in little spray bottles, like a breath freshener. And then he moves down the line to granola bars and chocolates.
You know, I think this is fun. I think it should be fun, and I think it's safe if consumed and used the right way. And, like, this gives us an opportunity to, like, share that information with people, you know? It's not some scary back alley thing.
And Granny says sharing that information keeps customers from having a bad high after they leave the store, which just means they'll be more likely to come back when they run out. Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration focused on issues of food, fuel, and field. More stories like this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. We've been bringing you stories from farmers all over the Midwest for the past several weeks. They're part of the My Farm Roots series. Today, we meet Jack and Diane Aaron. They lived in Kansas City for decades, but when a friend left them a farm, they decided to take a chance on country living. While farm life is different, they've found it's anything but quiet. Suzanne Hogan has this profile.
Stay down. Stay. You know, if you don't live in the city, you notice all the sounds. The only time I notice a change in sounds in the city is when it was dead silent, when there would be a snow day. And out here, we've got, you know, it's just different sounds. We have birds that'll wake us up, and a calf that likes to wake me up at 6 because he wants to eat. What else do we hear? It's peaceful.
It's just peaceful. It's quiet most of the time.
But it isn't. It doesn't make you crazy. I mean, you know, people who live in the city think it would be awful to live in the country, but that hasn't bothered me. Jack's always been an outdoorsman. He always hunted and did things, so he was really anxious to come out to the country. And being here is not as country as what it could be. You know, Highway 58, just a mile away, and we're on a paved road, and that's what people have commented on when they've come here and they hadn't been here before, is that it was so handy and it wasn't really like we were so far away. So it really, it's closer here to the grocery store than when we lived in the city, because I always went north to Kansas City North. We have 2 riding mowers. I'm on one, he's on one.
We kind of got it down to a fine art. We cut, 10 acres about once a week and weed eat.
I cut around the house. He cuts all around in other places, around the pond and down to the pond. We've got people who come in and they cut the hay end of July, first of August. Yeah. There's always something going on. If somebody hears that you need something, like when my arm was broken and I was having trouble because the ladder was just straight up down here, the other two came up and helped Jack. Don't even have to ask. They just, if they hear you're doing something, here they come.
In case of fear, you can get anything done out here.
Little ditty by Jack and Diane. 2 American kids doing the best they can.
More stories from America's farmers are at harvestpublicmedia.org. We appreciate you tuning in today. Our Earth Eats team includes Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Mark Chilla, Luann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Betsy Shepard, and everyone at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, now with 5 locations in Bloomington. Blooming Foods has supported locally produced food and artisanal goods since 1976. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, 1 block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, now with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. For Earth Eats, I'm Annie Corrigan. See you next week.